I always wanted to know who the best player was on tour simply because I wanted to actually work as hard. And then I ran into a little guy by the name of George Knutson out of Canada. And I watched him hit the golf ball. I watched him with the wide stance, taking the club back way inside, releasing the club. One of the greatest ball strikers I'd ever seen.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the McKellar Golf Podcast. My name is Lon Stronningham and I'm joined this week, as I'm joined every week, by my good pal and co-host, Jeff Shackleford. How are you doing, Shaq?
I'm recovering. I'm doing well. It was a great week. And now it's pouring rain here. So the Genesis escaped with a fantastic week. And in the one good West Coast swing event that did not get ruined by weather.
Yeah, I won by Hideki Matsuyama. I was there. You know that because
you were there, and I got many people asking me. Did he admit that this is a great spectating experience in course?
You did. I noticed that. It's a nuanced answer, Jeff. I mean, it certainly is. You're right. I hate to say it, but in my previous visit, I think I probably just was at the wrong spots, going to the wrong spots. You know, you're down, but you know, 2 and 11, and
it's 10. A little tight up there. It's a little tight.
But once you get out, you get out to 6 and 16, and out that end, you know, it's wonderful. And of course, 18 is great. It was a really actually it benefited well in. In my assessment, it benefited from just coming from a couple of days at Pebble Beach, which is a kind of awful customer experience. But Riv is a lot more intimate, isn't it? So that really helps. The ropes aren't literally Adam Scott pulls it, you know, 8 yards off the fairway, and you know you're standing next to him as he, you know, on 17 as he hits it down. That was great. And also, again, once you start walking down around the property properly, you can jump from the front nine to the back nine.
Yep.
It really was. I absolutely loved it. It was again just the contrast with Pebble Beach and the AT&T. Genesis do a wonderful job, Jeff. I mean, everything from the branding, from the kind of just a little thoughtful touches for when you get there. Even the staff were great. I mean, I went to get some food, and some poor guy. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and he looked frazzled. I mean, he was so pleasant. It was all, you know, really nice, intimate, great fan experience. I absolutely
loved
our date. We really did. So, congrats to Genesis.
Well, it was a little mellow this year, and I thought about it. I was going to write. I still will write a little, but it was a little more subdued, but in a way, when you think about it, after Phoenix, maybe that was a nice thing. They raised the prices a little, and that may be bringing a little different fan. You're right. Tigers people and Genesis, they set a tone of I think it's not easy to do. They set a tone of sort of class and a little bit of elegance, but I don't feel stuffiness. You know, you see the thing they do with the cars, which they could be really tacky with, and they created a place where you can pick up a piece of artwork, and this year you could send postcards to people, which I got a big chuckle out of because there was a mailbox for whoever you want to mail it to, and then there was one for players and caddies. Who's going to send a postcard to a caddy? But anyway, it made me laugh. And they had a cool little thing where you could listen to the audio on the 14th tee. It didn't pick up the conversations as well as I'd hoped. It picked up the sound. It was fun. The guys next to me, like when the impact sound, they like, ooh, the Bang & Olufsen headphones are so sharp. But so little stuff like that, you know, and there you're surrounded by Genesis cars and you can sit in the car and somebody talks to you, but it's not tacky or forced. It's just nice. It's just a nice thing. And, it's been a great run. We've been through, you know, Northern, I mean, just perfect contrast to the previous sponsor, Northern Trust, where they did try to set this tone of kind of, I don't know, arrogance or something. It was just really, they just weren't a fit. And, so Genesis combined with Riviera, as you saw, it's not an easy place to get there. But when you get there, once you're on the site, they treat you well. Of course, I'd still love pairing sheets and a few other things. But they make you feel welcome, you know, and that was the problem with the U.S. Open last year at L.A. It's a problem. Yeah, we know, of course, the thing that makes Augusta National the best is they may be very wealthy people. They may be very exclusive. But when you step through their gates, you are a guest and they want you to be impressed, to have a great time and to feel like you got your money's worth. And, you know, it just, I thought about it too, in the context of all this stuff going on in golf, and there's just so much that goes into making a golf tournament work, and it doesn't take much from not to work. And I don't think players understand some of those things, just like the broadcast or golf architecture. I just think they take for granted all the things that have to come together to make a tournament work. So when you see a good one, it's worth calling out and highlighting and noting that other tournaments should come and take a look and understand and learn from the example set.
Yeah, there's just something in the air in that particular spot on Google.
Well, you have history too. You just know, there's no number or no way to quantify it, but there, you just know that they've been there. That was the 60th time at Riviera. All the people who've played there, kind of the little rituals and the guys, they know the place and the things that bug them with the Kikuyu that they don't get. And I'm still pondering whether I need to address the fourth hole thing even more, which is just exhausting. But yeah, the history and the aura and you even get that over at Rancho Park where it used to be when they played the champions. Like, you just know this is a place where they come and I don't know how you pinpoint what that means, but it does mean something. Just like the Scottish Open at Gullin versus Renaissance. You know, there's just, it's just the difference between playing, you know, Royal Albert Hall and a festival out in the field in the middle of nowhere. You know, there's just a difference that I think, and it's the thing the tour has to dig in on, because if they're going to survive, this is going to good places is so key, and live is not.
Yeah.
And they need to really dig in on that.
The, just a quick small note as well. You're talking about it's difficult to get there and difficult. Well, it's really not that difficult, actually. Again, small point, shuttle service for fans was phenomenal, really polite, really well organized, and very, very efficient.
Good.
So really, yeah, I loved being there for a day as a fan. I mean, just absolutely loved it. I mean, obviously, you guys are inside the ropes and you're muckety-mucketing with all the big stars. But you know what? I had a brilliant time as a fan. Actually, fan note, for anybody who, you know, goes to golf tournaments and spends an entire day out walking the fairways, go to the driving range after the round.
Really?
Just go to the driving range. It's the most fantastic. So it was. I think it was early tea times on Saturday. Ended up in the driving range about 2 o'clock and sat behind Rory for 45 minutes as he was hitting balls. Just fantastic.
Wow.
And you've got this, they've got these TrackMan range things and you can watch every shot, which is really, I'm sure Rory wasn't paying any attention to it. He was looking at these TrackMan numbers on his phone, but it's great for the fans. Really good. I mean, his distance control was just ridiculous. Yeah. I think he might have been hitting an 8-iron for 20 minutes.
Huh.
And it was literally between 174 and 176. I mean, it was just incredible.
Yeah.
And he worked his way through. That's a new element this year.
That was a new element. And I kind of now bummed I didn't go pay attention to it more. But that was the first time they've had that.
You can spend, you know, I did it at Pebble Beach as well. Went there at the end of the day and the guys who are all, it's funny, you can just see who's not happy.
Yeah,
Pebble Beach. Holman was on the range both days I was there. He was on the range after his round for a long time, and lo and behold, he shows up after his round on Saturday. The steam coming out of his ears, not talking to his caddy. Morikawa was there. He'd hit a shot and then he'd look at his phone for 5 minutes, and you know, and shoot the shit with his caddy. And I'm thinking, this guy, he doesn't know what's coming. And of course, he goes out the next day and shoots 66. So he obviously knows something that I don't.
And it's what you love about Max. I mean, he tries so, that tournament means so much to him, and he tried almost too hard. It was so wild watching that group with Rory and Wyndham and he on Thursday. They got off to he and Wyndham and Rory got off to a good start. And Max was struggling out of the gate. He ends up beating both of them in the tournament. Clark misses a cut, but it shows you how. Four rounds, what can happen over 4 days. But and the group just unraveled. The wind really got up. The only time we had any really significant wind, and it was just so fascinating because I asked the day before in the press conference of Wyndham, it seems like a great pairing for you guys. And it wasn't like they weren't fighting or anything, but it's just funny how the dynamic of a group you think is going to be a great group, and like there's just the air went out, like a couple loose shots, the wind, weirdness, and it was just goofy out there. Like there just was no vibe, and they were kind of feeding off each other, just kind of the same way you could also see a group feed off each other making birdies. And but I wouldn't think much of. I mean, Rory, I wrote it in the newsletter. He looks to me like he's just in that mode. He's playing a lot, and he's just about maintaining his game, and then peaking at a taking it up a notch closer to the Masters. But his game's in a very good place. He drove it. I guess statistically, he drove it better than anybody. I still think that new TaylorMade driver. He's getting used to a new ball. But I was impressed, and his putting looked very good to me. Yeah, the whole game looked good. Wyndham Clark was just alignment. His alignment was so bad on a few shots, and I was like, I wanted to go, "Hey, you're aiming way left there, buddy." But I enjoyed watching him. Gosh, he hits it a long way. I mean,
He does. He, yeah.
he hits it past Rory sometimes,
You
and you don't
don't
think
know.
so at the tee. How many players can you say that hit him? I mean, I don't think there's more than two or three that might be longer than Rory. That's impressive. So, but most impressive of all is probably Max, because he just looked absolutely miserable and lost, and he ends up, yeah, he ended up with a backdoor top 10 there, didn't he?
I think so. Well, he shot 65 in the second day and then 71. Whatever.
Good for him. And he's it's nice to see when it really you can really tell it means something to him, and that's always nice, especially in this day and age.
The just to double back on McIlroy, you see all part of his actually, he did the same at Pebble Beach. When he won, was playing with Ludwig, was I think it was 5 or 6 under, then went double, bogey, triple bogey, dropped 5 shots in 3 holes. He did the same and on Thursday, didn't he? I think he doubled 15 and triple 16, I think it was, and then never kind of got over it. His chipping, Jeff, his chipping numbers. I looked on Sunday, I mean, they're pretty bad.
Tough, man. You've gotta be. I don't. I people. I mean, I see it every year. You see some really weird shots there, and the guys just sometimes they underestimate how tricky that stuff can be, and they get cute with shots too.
Well, it wasn't great at the it wasn't great at Pebble either, but I'm he's won this year, so I'm sure he feels he's on track. He was talking pretty he looked pretty good on the range to me, not that I would know much, but he was talking pretty positively about his ball striking. So we'll see, just heading into the Masters. Here, the other cup I really want to talk about, another, what about Scheffler, Jeff? Did you follow him much? Did you see much of him? Because he all I saw with all these social media videos and my goodness, he is this putting stuff is I mean, oh.
Doug Ferguson and I were talking with another writer, reminding him that we're old, that yeah, every era has had a player like this where, and we've already covered this, I know, on the show before, where the ball striking is so good. They hit so many greens around. And the difference, though, in this case versus say Tom Kite or Vijay Singh or Lee Westwood, there's just been these guys who just hit a lot of greens, and they start to kind of lose their mind over their putting. Their putting stroke isn't that bad. And by the way, I mean, you don't see any bad strokes on the tour. You see bad speed or whatever. You don't see many collapsing wrists like you used to, which just whatever. It's a thing. It's funny. And you watch Scheffler and you go, well, that's a nice looking stroke. Or you look at Rory when he supposedly isn't putting well. That's a nice looking stroke. Justin Thomas, he just looks like he's thinking too much, but nice looking stroke. And Scheffler, he's reached that point, and now everybody asked about it, and he's obsessed with it. And I mean, I saw some really lame takes on it, like, well, he hasn't made he, all these putts he missed. Well, these are like 7 and 8 footers and 9 footers at Riviera. Those aren't easy on Poa. That's 13 on the stimp meter. So, but it's clearly a thing. It's in his head. He was worst in strokes gained, and he's getting annoyed. And you just like to say, this has happened to other players in the past. Don't let it become such an obsession that you just have to take. There are going to be weeks where you just don't make a lot, and there are going to be weeks where you do. But he's very competitive, and I don't know what the deal is in particular. But it seems like he's really searching a little too much.
Our friend Mike Clayton posted a great quote from Peter Thompson about this whole business with Scheffler. I'll read it very quickly. This is Thompson. You can get yourself into a terrible mess if you expect to hole putts and then don't. It destroys your confidence and you get irritable, cranky, reckless, and stupid. The main thing for someone like me was to make sure I got two putts. Occasionally, you fluke one.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty
And
good, I
that's
think.
exactly to that point. Exactly. So, and I remember
Sure.
watching it very much with definitely with Kite and certainly VJ. Anyway, so he's fine. He'll be fine. I'm not too worried about him.
The other myth, I mean, I was listening to a couple of podcasts. I had a long drive home from Palm Springs yesterday and listened to a couple of podcasts, and people were saying, well, 2 years ago he was a fantastic putter. I mean, that's just wrong.
No.
He wasn't. He was I think for the season he was marginally above the neutral in strokes gained putting. So he's never been a great putter. He's never been a great putter since he turned pro. This is probably he's on the downward side of the cycle. He'll probably come back. I just, those two guys, Jeff, would you worry about them for the Masters at all? Scheffler and McIlroy, do you think they're okay?
Worry
They've got
for
a
them?
good spot. In terms of, would either have cause to be worried?
No, they're both in a very good place. If you just don't know about some of the whatever tendencies, take your pick of things. No, they're both just fine. They're healthy. They're hitting it well. They got quite a bit of time still, and there's no need to peak now. That said, Riviera is a great week to kind of tell you where you're at, as we've seen, and it tends to highlight. I mean, it's incredible how many times either the winner or guys who play well that week show up at Augusta and have a great week. So obviously, wonderful news for Hideki and Will Zalatoris. Oh wait, he's not in the Masters, is he? No, he's not. He needs to get in. I'll double check that. But anyway, but yeah, some of those people, Patrick Cantlay. I'd ask him after the round. How, still good week. Got much. Feel good going into the Masters, but unfortunately he was under the weather and couldn't stop for a couple of questions from the press, which is fine. He wouldn't have said anything interesting anyway, but he got $1 million for a tee for fourth place, and you'd think he'd be able to stop and chat a little bit, but he said he was under the weather. Everybody was under the weather last week. Lawrence, Tiger, Jordan, a lot of under the weathers. Must be something with the board meetings, the Zooms, the very contagious flu going around.
Do you think the event missed lacked a little bit in terms
Yeah.
of oomph? You did. So who, Ram wasn't there. Neiman was the last two winners.
Yeah.
That was a good joke from Max Homa laughing about how he's a double repeat winner or
Yeah.
whatever he was, defending champion. Do you think the event missed it? I was so wrapped up in it. I loved the whole my experience of the whole event. So I maybe didn't kind of cotton on to that, but I have heard people saying that it really did miss a little because of the guys who weren't there.
Yep, definitely a combination of the guys who weren't there, a little smaller field. And not just those two. I think it's just the missing number of people that you would have seen when you watch a group go by if you're sitting on a hole and here come some people you don't know that would have been in the past, Bubba Watson and Phil Mickelson and other people who've won there and played well there. It definitely is chipping away. Liv is it is taking these people you recognize, and I heard that comment many times. I turn on the live, I know who all those people are. I don't know who these people are, and I think they've really underestimated the damage that's done. I don't think they realize that they're probably just a few players and a few sponsors away from the thing completely unraveling on them. I just don't sense, at least that wasn't the sense I got last week, is they understand how close things are to really, really being bad for them. And so I also think they just take for again they take for granted all the things that go into making a golf tournament great. It's not just name players showing up. There's all sorts of other stuff with the fan experience, the TV experience, and by the way, CBS had some really fresh new angles, camera angles. The drones, like every year, these guys, they don't just stay in the same spot. They learn a place and they just get more and more amazing shots. And so all these things come together to make a tournament. It's not just the guys who show up and that they get their special recovery room and their special fish in the player dining. Like, it's many, many things that make a golf tournament great, and they better get their act together, because I think they're losing sight of that. At least that's my sense.
The any sign of or anything in the atmosphere that Genesis might, because they do too. They do the Riviera, and they also do the Scottish Open. And any sign that they might go the way of Wells Fargo and Honda and whoever else is.
Not at the moment. No, I didn't hear anything on that front. They seem very happy. So great sponsor. That's one of those key sponsors. The tour needs to be keeping very happy, them and RBC and a couple of others, because they not only are well, would get people's attention if they've left, but they're really great sponsors to have, and I mean, all of them are good in some way. They're supporting an event, but there's some that are definitely better than others. So no, that part seems good, and Riviera is a perfect fit for them and kind of what they're trying to do with their beautiful cars and the West Coast and all that stuff. And well, I didn't see any ratings today as we're recording this, but I'm sure it was a wasn't much on over the weekend. I mean, who you'd have to be insane to try to watch the NBA All-Star game. And the finish was fantastic. It was a little dead on Saturday, but Sunday was, I mean, gosh, that was we had a five-way tie and some good names and good players, and a 62, one of the great, it's got to be one of the great final rounds, not just in that tournament history, but in any tour event. That was impressive stuff. So, but before we get, by the way, I don't want to, before we leave players, I did get to spend some time watching Ludwig, and I wrote a little in the newsletter. He's Lawrence. He's so impressive. I think the thing that most impressed me was he's having fun. He enjoys what he does. So many of these guys look miserable, and I kind of figured, oh, he's going to be this really stoic, you know, the kind of the cliched Swede type. He's not super technical, which, as we've all known, a lot of the Swedes, they can get. I played with some in college. They can, you know, we know them all. They're just, they can get a little nuts with the swing stuff. Very natural golfer, very fast, having a good time, relaxed. He carries himself like somebody much older. I was just so impressed, and just hits it great. And first time at Riviera, and what a contrast. I watched some Victor Hovland, and I wrote about that too. He was just a basket case. You're like, dude, and he still shoots, 70, 69, 70, 69. But the amount of energy he expends, obsessing and fretting and being neurotic, and then you watch Ludwig, and he's just not wasting that energy. I don't know why I'm into the energy thing a lot, but I am at Riviera, especially when you waste, see how the guys wasted on number 10 doing what they do. But I was really struck by that. You know, over the course of a round and a season, something's going on with Hovland that he's just, I don't know, he's over exerting too much thought, pressure, whatever you want to call it. It's just weird.
He needs to find something. He needs to find, well, not Ludwig. I'll come on to him in a second, but Hovland needs to find, I don't know, something outside golf. He's got to take his mind off it because he looks wound up.
When he won the amateur at Pebble, I was up there, remember we were talking at the time. It became a story because, well, Brentley, I think, wrote about it. But, you know, between matches, he'd be in the player dining, which the media could sit in, and the USGA officials, and he's sitting there reading his phone, and was reading these really deep articles and stuff, and he was very different, much more low key, easygoing, and focused and intense, but not this just kind of crazy, crazed energy. Really, and so you're right. Yeah, he needs to get back to whatever it was, reading and reading obscure, weird articles. Just get your mind off stuff.
He needs to get laid, Jeff. Let's not be that. I mean,
Well,
let's
I don't know what he's doing, but it's just a waste of his energy. He's too talented to be obsessing like that. Anyway, so yeah, it was an interesting contrast seeing those two.
Yeah, you're dead. I mean, Åberg just carries himself so beautifully, doesn't he? We showed up And I was with my wife, my wonderful wife, and she was, oh my God, he's so handsome.
Yeah,
he
well,
really is.
Yeah. He's the full package. Yeah.
The full package.
Like Adam Scott, he doesn't act like a guy who thinks he's, everybody tell all the women tell him how beautiful he is. And he doesn't act like that. He just seems like a very solid person.
You mentioned that he's fast. Actually, I looked at his radar numbers. He's not that fast.
No. The way he plays the game.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. But people think he does hit the ball a long way, clearly. But he's only, I think his club head speed is about 118, 118 and a half, which isn't
about modern standards. Anymore. Yeah. He's just fine.
Do you know what? You are absolutely right. I was listening to Ogilvy on the Subpar podcast, and you only need to hit it far enough.
Yeah.
You only need to swing it fast enough. You don't need to.
With this equipment, you just these guys talking to speed pursuits. You're like, come on, you just need enough to let the modern equipment do the work. And of course, they just, it's a joke. I mean, number 11 and 17, two, it used to be two of the hardest par fives on the tour. Now both sub 4.5 averages and they didn't even have that much helping wind this last week. Just incredible how, there's just not much room out there for a short hitter.
One more quick note on Rory. Our friend Luke Cardenine posted a video of Rory from 2010 last week, and the contrast with Rory's swing then and what his swing is like now. Technically now, it's so much better, but my goodness, that swing from 2010, 2011, was winning majors. Golf is crazy, part 10,000. I mean, it really is quite remarkable that, technically a much better swing, but I wonder why.
Well,
I was talking to a pal about this. You wonder why. I'm guessing maybe the competition's stronger and deeper. But in 2011, I mean, he wasn't playing against mugs back then.
I did a Q&A with him for that will go in the newsletter before Valhalla. We went back and kind of relived that a little bit. And I did ask, about his game now. He just seems like, are you a better player now than you were then? And he didn't want to be obnoxious, and he just, statistically, I think it's pretty clear. You look at me the last 4 years and compared to that run, and there were gaps in my game then. So the question is why, and I think to your point, there are a lot of good players. I think the equipment has raised the level of some people that have made it harder to stand out. And then I think he's been a little unlucky. I got interviewed by someone asking me, is he a choker? And I went, no. If you go look at those rounds, it's a little like a horse race, and horse racing. Sometimes you just get beat at the wire. You think you run the right race. You think you've gone, especially a horse that gets out front. You think you've maintained the right pace. And sometimes somebody just comes flying, and he played final rounds the way Jack or Tiger would have with those leads. And, they didn't get passed a lot, but, or ever hardly, it seems like, but he did. And I talked to some of the people behind the scenes, and they're all in agreement that the driver face and the forgiving nature of it is definitely something that needs to still be looked at. It is fascinating how they lose their mind over the ball, touching the ball, but it feels like there's a consensus that we got to make sure that the best drivers do get a proper reward for what they do, that center strike and the consistency of it. And I think he's been undone. How I feel. I think Tiger's probably was cost a couple of majors because of equipment, but I think it's even more profound now. So that's just and of course, there's all the other stuff. We know there's more wisdom around the game. Although the more I'm after a week like this and all the data obsession and reliance on it, I'm just increasingly finding so many holes in the concept of these guys just relying on some data person to tell them how to play a course and different things. And so I think there is an opening there still for the instinctive player, the player who plays a practice round, who does take some of the numbers, but then still does their own thing. I do think that is a place where a guy like him will still differentiate themselves. Ludwig just said, I'm just going to go where they tell me to hit it. And okay, I get it, first time around, but, and he did read all of his putts, but you would love to see a little bit more all right, I'm taking what they're giving me. But, you know, after a couple of times around this course, I might adapt, you know, the team plan.
I'm just giggling, talking about instinctive golf. Just as we showed up, Ricky Fowler stepped onto the 10th tee, stood there for 5 minutes, eventually pulled a 3-wood and put it in the left bunker straight.
How many times have you played the hole now, really? And
oh, my God, it was just awful. Here, well, I can't believe we've talked about it. Sorry, go on.
Well, no, I mean, and they all cite the data for that play. Well, now two guys only laid up this year, so how can you say the data tells you that it's the right play? All the data is telling you is that's what everybody else is doing now. There's no, and this year the green was easier with a wedge if you lay up down the left side, and they still just bomb it up. And again, it's that stress. It's the stress you go through. Hovland hold a bunker shot for birdie, but the amount of energy he expended going back and forth and getting mad, you know, after the wedge shot, he banged his club into an irrigation valve box. And of course, the next one he holds, but it's like all that drama. You know, this isn't a major, but in a major, that whole, like, what, you know, that's Tiger and Jack were different because they appreciated the value of pars. They've spoken about that. And the data doesn't tap into some of that stuff. And so that's where there is still an advantage for a smart multi, you know, a player with all the skills. Very talented, but it is just like every other sport. There are benefits to it, but it could also be your undoing. And yeah, you're right. It is amazing watching some of those guys take forever to come up with a play, and then you go, "Really? We had to wait all that for that? And you know, you're going to do that? Really?" And by the way, Ricky Fowler, great. I feel like I've seen him hit a lot of great wedge shots. Why the hell isn't he laying out? Anyway,
you did mention Tiger. I guess we should briefly touch on him.
Rough week.
I don't know, Jeff. Are we ready to make any grand pronouncements on Tiger's, whatever's left of Tiger's career? It's looking, I think his last six starts, I think there's 3 WDs or something. I mean, it's not looking good. I mean, you saw him on he was long gone by the time I got there.
Yeah,
I think he played decently on Thursday. Nothing great. Lasted, I think, six holes on Friday, and then were you there for the great ambulance drama,
Lawrence? One of the great things about being a newsletter writer who covers the majors is, for the first time in my life, I went, "Why would I go stand out there when I can go out?" And that's actually when I went and watched Ludwig, and I had the most, and I ended up seeing some people I know. We had great chats watching him play. It was very quiet out there, and that kind of checked the phone occasionally, although the reception wasn't good for me. And it was like, and then of course I come in and everybody's like, I just spent 2 hours standing outside for an ambulance that brought IV bags. Like, I mean, what have we come to? And hey, you know, you have to do that. That's the job for in the click world, but in the newsletter world, yeah, not so much. And how embarrassing. By the way, a little embarrassing, I got to be honest with you, for the, you know, the tour's new recovery concept at the signature events. Thought there'd be IV bags in the recovery room. I mean, the place I go to, I joined this restore place that you do the cryo and you got the red light and the compression boots and the IV therapy. They got IV bags, but we don't have those on site at a tournament. So we had to call. And of course, you know, what happened is they got a call at the Palisades LA Fire Department. They're like, "Oh, we get to get out of the place and go over to Rift." So they bring the hook and ladder. And I'm sure Tiger was horrified. And probably rather livid that somebody called 911 to
Tiger. I mean, he's kind of untouchable in a way, but you know, there just seems to be lots and lots of drama around him these days. Drama. It's all drama and no golf, really. And you just kind of wonder if this really is the last vestiges. It's hard to believe. He's not going to try. He can't just trap up at Augusta and try and, you know, pretend he's going to win the Masters. He's going to have to play, I think, players or something. I don't know if he's committed.
Or Bay Hill, one of those two he's going to play. And, I don't know. He looked – he's been really good in the press conferences the last couple of years, and he was not good on Wednesday. You could tell he was he wasn't feeling great. Something was bothering him, and then we heard back, and then, of course, we heard he gets sick. So I don't know. He looked uncomfortable in the press conference. He didn't know how to kind of give his you know, certain answers to give people just enough and a little smile. And and somewhat in his defense, he was choosing his words carefully on all this tour stuff. Cause I don't know if I tried to ask a question like, could you tell the fans what they should be excited about in this new private equity thing.
Oh,
and he,
good luck with
he
that one.
And then a few other guys tried the question in a different way. None of us were very successful. So he was being careful with his words, but he just seemed a little bit off or uncomfortable. So who knows? But when I saw the golf, plenty of club head speed, hitting it out there, looked great walking. I mean, the walking's amazing how little limp there is at all. So, I'm not ready to rule him out just yet.
Right. Well, we'll see. I think that's probably that taken care of. Obviously, from the sublime onto not the ridiculous, but the Mexico Open, is it this week, Jeff? The Mexican Open.
Yes, the Mexico Open, and then next week the event formerly known as the Honda with a bad name, the something of Palm Beaches, the Cognizant Classic of the beaches, or the West Palm. I don't know. It's just a brutal name, but tough couple of weeks, Lawrence, for the tour to go from. Yeah, this always happens, but this really seems worse than normal this year to go from the West Coast, even a bad way. I mean, a really bad West Coast year in the sense of everything but Riviera was really kind of had every week seemed to have something not great about it.
I guess it's just the tradition, but it just, you know, the West Coast wind comes up against the climax of the NFL. It's it would be, I mean, if we were moving into, you know, Riv this week, for instance, and or Pebble Beach this week and Riv next week, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
But I was listening all over the place to people bitching about the field in Mexico, but as a certified golf nerd, I'm actually looking forward to quite a few of the players.
Yeah, well,
there.
You watch that. You let us know how it goes.
Yeah. We'll move on, Jeff. We really got to get out of this. We're way over time.
Well, I mean, how often does a tour come to my hometown and you go to an event? Come on, we've got the Mexico Open and the West Palm Beach Classic coming up here. We don't have a lot to talk about the next few weeks. So,
in other news, we've talked about this in past podcasts, Jeff. We speculated that Paul McGinley would be in for that, and another name that was kicking around was Stevie Gallagher, Ryder Cup player, great Walker Cup player as well. But the name announced, the white smoke went up, and Dean Robertson, former European Tour player, the first, actually, it's not the first pro. Nathan Crosby was the first pro to be a Walker Cup captain, believe it or not. That's a good quiz question. But Dean Robertson, former European Tour player, now the coach, the University of Stirling. The RNA's University Series is doing, a student series, is doing a great job in building college golf over in Europe. But Dean's been at Stirling University for a few years, has traditionally been one of the strongest college teams in Europe. Stirling actually used to come over and play the Prestige, which is taking place this week in Palm Springs, and always did really well. So he's a great guy, Dino, actually, as he's known to everybody. Won the Italian Open, went through a few troubles, and wrote about it, talked about it very openly. Anyway, extremely competitive guy. I guess you could say that about all these pros, but my goodness, Dean is very, very competitive. So he'll do as good a job as he possibly can. You have to say that any captain of a GB9 team is facing an uphill battle these days against the United States, the college system, the depth and breadth of talent coming through in the United States is quite astonishing, as Nick Dunlap recently proved. But even at the, I know I hate the AGGA, but there's some players on the AGGA now, Jeff. My goodness, you might expect them to go straight to the PGA Tour. Actually, the one good news for GB9 is that probably half the team you would predict for the US at Cypress Point, they'll all be pro. They'll all be playing on live by 2025. That's a really good point. I mean, Caleb Surratt would have been an absolute shoo-in for the 2025 Walker Cup team. He's now on live. And Nick Dunlap's on so that's two out of the 10 that played in St. Andrews. That's actually going to be that'll be an interesting development to see how many of these guys jump early from amateur golf. Thorbjørnsen will be off. That's three out of 10. You could go through. Sargent will be off this summer as well. But again, there's a huge amount of talent coming through.
Even though it's Cypress Point, I was just going through some different stuff, and I was reminded, because I was going through the Masters media guide, that Fred Biondi won the NCAA and had a chance to play in the Masters. He chose to turn pro. Don't feel like he's doing a whole lot, and you're just like, okay, well, you had a chance to play the Masters. I, you know, hope the Korn Ferry Tour is fun, but you know, they're in a hurry and people around them are in a hurry to cash in. And by the way, Nick Dunlap, miscut at the Genesis, you know, just look, I get, yeah, it was a big decision he had to make, but you got to wonder, would have been better to just finish the semester out and you would have still had your status as a winner in a few more months. And we'll see how that goes. But it's pretty hard to be thrown into. I mean, again, he won a tour event, but Riviera is a different beast with firm, fast greens and a little better field and all that. And so we'll see. But yeah, we have no idea what that team could look like for the U.S., but I would not count on many guys retaining their amateur status to play. That just seems like those days are over. But who knows? The way the game's going, the USGA and RNA may have to change their amateur status rules between now and then. Who knows, you know?
Well, that's both the Curtis Cup team and the Walker Cup team from GB9 are both former pros. Katrina Matthew is the captain of the Curtis Cup team, and now we have Dean Robertson's captain of the Walker Cup team. Quick, any updates on the framework, the events of June the 6th, Jeff? Oh, actually, quickly. No, hang on, before you do that, I'm going to a very quick one. I heard a story last week. I mean, that such is the level of trust between the PGA Tour negotiating team and the Saudis that that when the PGA Tour group go to the Middle East, they all take burner phones.
Yeah.
It's quite and the planes are, the plane is swept when it lands back at the global headquarters. That's what does that say about the level
global
of
home, please? Can we stay on brand? Yeah, the global home, and yeah, there's a security firm in Jacksonville that's making a lot of money doing the sweeping and probably laughing about it. But you can't blame them. If you've read about Pegasus at all, and some of the things that the Saudis have used to track people and what they do with phone numbers. And granted, you still have to open a link when somebody texts it to you, although I'm sure they've advanced on Pegasus by now. You've got to be careful dealing with those people.
Yeah. Arthur, you spotted that Arthur Blank interview. Was there anything in it last week that you thought really stuck out to you?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of huge. I highlighted to some of my peers in the media center, and I got a lot of yawns. But I he spoke to front office sports Daniel Kaplan, and he you need tissue to read it because it's so sad, this horrible plight of the families of NFL owners. The value of the franchises is just so high now that when daddy dies and leaves it to the kids, the inheritance taxes are so great, and they have these rules that won't allow private equity investment. And so the gist was, we need more private equity in sports. And so that was his issue with the NFL situation. But I think that has tentacles in this tour situation, because it just seems I was not aware of how many rules there are, not just on international ownership, but on private equity. And it's fascinating that the other leagues have loosened up on that, but the NFL has not. And what does that say what they think of private equity? But he then in the interview essentially said, hey, you know, we've convinced these guys to move from a nonprofit to a for-profit model. And, you know, we've been told that the actual tournament structure would remain under the current model of nonprofit, and the PGA Tour Enterprises would be for-profit. The problem, Lawrence, is if you listen to Charlie Hoffman's press conference or Tiger's press conference, they keep telling us how all this money coming in is going to make the tournaments better. Well, if those two entities are separate, that's kind of hard to do in some way. So I just think that it's turned out they put this money in and it's a get rich quick scheme for these guys who are voting on it and who are in the right place at the right time. But this money for now is not going to something that betters the week to week PGA Tour, other than enriching some guys and convincing them to stay around. And I'm sadly, the more we see and the more you talk to people, that's it. That's all they got. They have nothing about what they're doing to improve the tour. It's just keeping these guys with money, and what those investors get, I don't know, but it is sounding more and more like their investment is part of a grander scheme of normalizing private equity, of getting to know the Saudis, of getting international ownership stakes in franchises, things like that. And the actual day-to-day, week-to-week tour product, that's just a that's something they'll worry about when they get to it. And I just think that's shocking and amazing, and especially juxtapose against LIV, what they're doing right now. Now, although there are rumblings, Lawrence, that they may do something freakish and lame. We'll see what happens here coming up in their next few events. But they have started to establish a little more of a legitimacy instead of being a freak show. And the tour, meanwhile, is not showing us what they're going to do to maintain the meritocracy, maintain what got them here. And what are they doing? They've got an influencer qualifying to a tournament and all these other kind of weird, tacky things that we've seen that are basically they're reacting to LIV with tackiness and with weird stuff. It just continues to be their reaction continues to make the situation worse instead of giving us some sign that they have a grand plan.
Just on the Myrtle, that's the people who didn't see this. I think it's the Myrtle Beach Open, and there's as well as being a traditional Monday qualifier, I expect there's also a qualifier, an influencer qualifier. I think it's 15 golf influencers are all playing together for one spot. Actually, you know what, Jeff? In terms of promoting the tournament, well, you know, 100,000 people were watching that good live stream last week. I can't remember the field. I know Dan Rappaport's in it. He'll be last, probably, and he doesn't look very good. But, you know, your sponsors' invites have long been a part of PGA Tour events, so they have. So I'd give them that one.
Here's the problem. The timing is horrendous.
I would imagine it will be live streamed and some. I'm guessing it will be live streamed. All these guys. Well, let's see what the numbers are. Again, 100,000 watching that good live stream last week, which is, you know, LIV Golf are paying billions of dollars for like a quarter of the audience, certainly on YouTube. It's amazing. So I get it from the perspective of the sponsors. I think that's fine in this instance.
I totally understand the history of sponsors' invitations. The LA Open used to have, I mean, that's how Babe Zaharias first played the Los Angeles Open. But my point is, right now, when you're supposedly trying to fend off this thing that you belittle as being kind of tacky, and then you go and do things that seem sort of circus, freakish, tacky, that's my point, is that this is not the time right now to be doing those things. I get it. It's a new event, the Myrtle Beach thing. They're trying to generate some attention. It's a opposite field event, I believe, and I'm sure they're just scraping the bottom of the barrel to fill out that field. And that I get all that. I just think the timing is suspect. A little hard, by the way, on Danny. Come on, man. He's an actual writer in the press room. Come on, you should be rooting for him. Who else is there? Some names on there. I mean, who are the? I don't even know who.
Well, I think is Bryant on it.
I'm sure George Bryant.
Yeah, George Bryant. And I'm sure Garrett Clark's playing it as well.
Garrett's not playing. Is he not? I think, Garrett, it's one name I would have known. And, I would have caught that one. Let's see. Come on. Now, I got to ask you, though, I searched Myrtle Beach influencers. Oh, Lord, that's a disturbing Google search.
there you go.
Now, I got to ask you who this person is, because you're up on who the cool kids are, because you're admitting on this podcast that you watch this stuff. Who is, Peter Finch is playing. Come on. No. No. He's a good player. What's the? Of course, this writer couldn't even type the name. Anyway, I'll find it. You keep going. Whatever. It's here somewhere.
The other freak show. I'm sure, pretty certain that Anthony Kim's going to be showing up at the next LIV event. That bubble will burst. Be really interesting, actually. Can you step away from golf for 8 to 10 years? I mean, obviously, not hugely naturally gifted. And come back and compete at that level. My interest will be focused mainly on that.
That's bold.
We'll see. But I'm guessing if he does very, very well. That will be him co-opting in on the live tour. Another one gone. And another loss. Well, maybe the PGA Tour doesn't see Anthony Kim as a loss, but he's already been gone.
So I have a question. So here it is. So if Busta Jack qualifies for the Myrtle Beach
no
Classic,
idea who he is.
Does he have on the scoreboards, is his name Busta Jack, or do we put his real name? I found the press release. This is hilarious. It gives everybody's combined totals on these things, which is fascinating in itself. Their subscriber numbers and...
Oh, really?
Oh, what a world. What a world. Anyway, like I said, look, I get it. The history of the tour, these things have happened in different ways, but not right now. Wow, what timing. So I don't know. But I guess, the Fat Perez probably won't qualify, so it'll probably be somebody like George Bryan, who actually did recently play an event, is, of course, a very good player, but still kind of weird.
You're such an old fuddy-duddy,
no,
Chris.
I'm just saying the timing is bad. That's all.
In other news that the PGA Tours better watch, the Asia Tour event in Malaysia Open at the weekend was won by David Puge, another college who would, I think he would be a senior at ASU now. He's now the Malaysian Open champion. Shot a sporty little 62-62 at the weekend. 22 years old, he got a spot in the Open, Jeff. That was a part of the Open Series.
Open qualifying,
Open qualifying.
Made the cut on the number and 262s. That's pretty impressive. Incredible. I watched him a little bit last year at the U.S. Open qualifying at Hillcrest. He's a nice player. He was a little immature, I thought. Had a few little temper moments, but he played. He went out and tried to qualify. And that's another part of this, Lawrence. I mean, I saw a bunch of guys. I know they have to, some of them, turn up in the Asian Tour event this week. But they are, I argue the Neiman situation with some people. And, they're making the effort, some of them are, to try to get in these majors. And there's something to be, I think, admired in that. They're not just sitting back and counting their dirty Saudi blood money.
The other note from that Asia Tour event in the Malaysian Open was the guy who finished third, 19-year-old, I'm going to butcher his name, Denwit Burabunsa, shot 61 on Sunday. I think he's won three times in the last 6 weeks or something, and 19 years old. I'm guessing he won't be making his way to the PGA Tour when he decides to turn pro. It'll be somebody else that will be probably going to live. I'm telling you, Jeff, this, these are... Again, I'm guessing if you had to rank on the PGA Tour, would still be ahead, but it's getting closer and closer, and the momentum is only going one way.
Well, and I just quickly, it's also though at the same time, look at the top of the leaderboard the last few weeks. You still need experience and age, and people are going to get caught up in this who the next player thing is, and grabbing people and pushing people, but experience still matters at the end. And you just look at the golf courses in the last few weeks that do require a little more seasoning and experience, and guys in their 30s, heaven forbid, have won. I know it's the end of the world, but to the marketing teams that in the various tours, but so yes, there are good players coming, but people do need to remember it does take a little while to really be competitive at the top level. You need some experience for the most part.
Yeah, fair enough. Listen, we'll leave it at that, Jeff. Good to talk to you. Before we go, very quickly, just a reminder to people, if you go to McKellar Magazine and purchase your McKellar magazines or T-shirts or whatever, if you type in podcast, capital letters podcast, in the code box, you will get free shipping.
That hat you were wearing last week, is that on the site? Because a couple people on that photo you posted asked me, is that? I'm like, go to the website. I think it's there. You're quite the hat model, apparently.
Yeah, there you go. It's Mike Clayton wears a hat. It's a beautiful hat. It really is. It's a beautiful hat. I think we've got a few left. So if you're looking for that hat, you better jump on there quick, and you'll get free shipping. Which is fine for us because it won't cost a lot to ship a hat. It's a 15 magazine order to Australia that generally gives me kittens, Jeff. But anyway, we're always glad when people buy the magazine. Issue 8 coming soon. So mckellarmagazine.com, type podcast into the code box when you're leaving, and you will get free shipping to anywhere in the world. Jeff Shackelford, I will speak to you next week.
Oh, can't wait for your Mexico Open recap.
Oh no.
It's a wide open road. It's a wide open road.